Let's move on to common rooms. I think there's a common room next word.
That's a stretch, but I'll do my best.
Okay. And just make sure the reporter has your name.
Tom Hodgman.
Thank you, Mr. Hodgman. The testimony that you folks filed, the department's filed, said that there's potential as a result of this development to reduce nesting success. And I just want to make sure we understand, the commission understands whether that potential reduction in nesting success is due to the location of structures, the location of the development and structures within that development, or whether, independent of the location of structure, it is due to simply the increase in human activity and boating, fishing activity on and around lakes. In this regard, noting that the concept plan includes something over 150 miles of conserved shoreline, it obviously will respect setback requirements and the Land Use Regulation Commission's fairly strict limitations on removal of vegetation within the first 100 feet and then further restrictions beyond up to 250 feet. Is there a concern with respect to the location of structures in the shoreline area with respect to the success of loon nesting?
I'm going to need to get some help from my colleague here, Steve Walker, or Dr. Elo. I was not that closely involved with loon issues related to our testimony. I have thoughts on your question, but I think as it relates directly to our testimony, you know, one of those two folks could answer the question better.
Steve Walker, FNW. I'll take a stab at part of your question. The loon nests and habitat features, I think, are one of those elements that can be addressed at the level of individual envelope review. The specific development design review is not one of those features, as Dr. Evo explained previously, that are place-based or place-specific, like Wakeford waterfowl habitat riparian areas that we have suggested be removed. That's something we can address at the time of development.
Okay. Good. Thank you. And so it is not the increase in boating and fishing and that sort of thing that you are so much concerned with.
Well, that goes hand in hand. Loons are sensitive to a couple of things. One is direct disturbance of the nest, but the other is disturbance around their nesting area by both, specifically wakes. Wakes that, because they can't get up on the shore, they nest pretty much at water level, and wakes can wash up and destroy nests and eggs. That's not uncommon all over the state, and it really depends on the spot that the nest is located and whether there are wakes adjacent to that. So a general increase in use on Moosehead Lake or any of the other bodies of water, you're not able to make a direct cause and effect relationship on the loon nesting success that way.
Okay. One final question on the common loon. We heard testimony earlier this week that suggested that we prefer mid-sized ponds, mid-sized lakes, a number of which will not be part of the development program. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and in fact, you reach a threshold with a body of water where it's not apparently large enough to support a loon nesting territory. We find that many of the small ponds get visited regularly by loons, but they don't nest them.
Do you have a threshold size?
Somewhere in literature, that we've been using, and we analyzed actually a lot of the Down East Lakes easement area and West Branch easement area relative to that, but I don't have that.
Okay, thank you. Staying with birds, rusty blackbird and leaf spinner.
That's me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me just get the alarm right.
Yeah.
heard, both in the application and in testimony, that there are some, I believe, 27 wetlands in the contact plan area in which there was a known blackbird occurrence, and that 13 of those happened to be within development areas that have been proposed by Plum Creek. And we've heard testimony concerning what it needs to protect those birds. That ranges all the way from the only way to actually protect them is to eliminate the development area altogether, to simply relying on the buffers that are routinely relied upon and required under current state law and rules, such as 250 feet from wading bird habitat. Where along the continuum, you folks filed some general testimony about perhaps some enhanced buffers in some cases for certain types of wildlife. With respect to the rusty blackbird, maybe the blackbird is maybe a leaf bittern, which I think there was one occurrence that was documented. Where would you fall? How would you deal with that?
In a general response, I think I want to start with just the idea that what we proposed in our written testimony is not going to result in no impact, but that it would extremely limit any impact. And speaking specifically for rusty blackbird, my experience with the bird over the past 5 or 6 years indicate that those buffers that we've set up, those series of buffers, 100-foot buffers in certain cases, 250-foot buffers in others, not to mention considering the easement lands as well, would adequately protect that species in this area. There may be a case where one wetland is, could be lost, but our research, I'm a co-investigator for the research project at the University of Maine that was mentioned yesterday. So I have intimate knowledge of the design and data collection for that project. We spent a great deal of time, looking for birds and trying to understand where they're found and the habitat that they use. And it's we really have no evidence that habitat is limiting their species. And I think that's really an important thought. Either myself or folks under my direction have looked in hundreds. The two-year study was over 550 wetlands examined, and there's probably another 300 to 400 on top of that, going back 3 or 4 more years. And the birds are there. There's not a lot of birds out there, but there seems to be a lot of people habitat out there. And so we really don't think habitat is limiting for that bird.
Is there any speculation as to why some of that habitat is used and some of it is not? We heard from Eric Hines yesterday. And as you wrote in his testimony, that some of the habitat is used, some of it is not, that nobody knows why, and one should not take a chance that they will in fact disperse to other suitable habitat.
Yes, I heard that testimony, and we're just beginning to unravel some of the mysteries of that bird on the breeding grounds. They appear to be closely associated with very shallow pools of water, such as you might find in the beaver flowage that has been drawn down after it's been abandoned, or newly flooded beaver flowage where there's a great deal of saturation back into the shrubby wetland. The bird that feeds on caddisflies and other aquatic invertebrates by wading through and picking them as opposed more like some other species of birds than an actual blackbird. So it's an interesting species. But we think that those habitat features are present out there in fair numbers. There's certainly plenty of beaver flowages in northern Maine, and certainly many of them are ephemeral. Some of our nest sites have been in areas that are a chain of beaver ponds. We have one that's active and several that have been abandoned. I mean, in short, yeah, there seems to be plenty of habitat.
Thank you. And just to be clear, and I'm reading from your testimony with respect to providing enhanced protection for riparian areas, maintain a 100-foot no disturbance buffer around all the primary or intermittent streams, maintain a 250-foot no disturbance buffer on second order and higher streams, the recommendation about stream crossings, and maintaining a 250-foot no disturbance buffer around all wetlands. That would do it for you?
That would capture the vast majority of the habitat.
Thank you. I'm getting pressure from my left. Okay, let's go to...